Thank you.
And we're holding on to confess some of the days, the Mishnah. Now that we've talked about the various things, the various conditions that make an animal or a brood chafer, the ones that even though there's a certain similarity, nevertheless the animal or the brood is still kosher. So now we're going to talk about other kinds of sicknesses or other kinds of conditions that have nothing to do with chafers. The Mishnah says, Achuzas dam, Achuzas hadam, if an animal was seized by blood, which Rashi just says was seized by blood and became sick. So in other words, we mean something like high blood pressure or something like that. Vamushenes, or an animal that was affected by smoke. Vamutsunenes, or an animal that was chilled and caught a cold. So exactly what it sounds like. The Rambam actually explains these things in terms of, there was the famous old medical theory about the four humors of the body, four major liquids in the body, the blood, bile, and a couple of others, that each one of them, if there's too much of it, then the person or the animal becomes sick. We have examples of that in Hebrew and in English, for example. We speak of somebody who's depressed. In Hebrew, we call it mora shchora, which literally means black bile, and in English, the word melancholy comes from the same from the same thing in Greek. Anyway, there was this idea that you have these four humors, these four liquids in the body, and they have to stay in, they have to stay in balance, and if not, then it becomes sick. So the Rambam explains that the three of them that we're talking about in our Mishnah are three of those, and he says it's missing one because it's not common in animals. In any case, so those three, the Sha'afa Hadufni, another example, if an animal ate Hadufni, which is oleander, it's called in English, it's a plant which is poisonous to animals. Or if it ate chicken, chicken waste, which also then is harmful to animals. Or if it drank bad water, the kind of water that was left uncovered, and there's a concern throughout Shabbos that a snake might have drunk from it. In all those cases, the animal, so in other words, you know, obviously for a person to drink such water would also be dangerous, and the Gemara talks about it throughout Shas, but here we're talking about where the animal drank it. By the time you eat the animal, it'll have digested that water, and therefore it's not going to be a problem. So in all those cases, kshera, then the animal is kosher, and you can eat it, because even, so these are things that have nothing to do with chafers, in the sense that even though the animal is, they are deadly, but they're not included among the chafers because they are curable. And again, there's no danger, particularly in eating them either. So they'll be in the category of what we learned before. We learned in the previous parak about misukenes, about an animal that's dangerously ill. So we said that better you shouldn't eat it. But nevertheless, it is allowed. As long as they're allowed, chef didn't eat it. And there's no issuring it. We said that there is midas chasidus, like we had, for example, we said about Yechezkel HaNavi, that he wouldn't eat from such an animal. There's no issuring it. However, the Mishnah continues, achos sam hamavis. However, if the animal ate poison, meaning hadufni that we talked about before, is poisonous to animals, not to people. Here we're talking about if it ate something that's poisonous to human beings. Hoshi Kisha Nahasha was bitten by a snake, and now there can be venom in his body. Muteres Mishum Trefa, then from the point of view of Trefa, it is Mutter. These things don't make the animal Trefa. Vasurim Mishum Sakonis Nefashis. However, it is also to eat it on the grounds of danger to health. The Torah tells us, Vinishmautum Oidanakha Sefa, and to be careful about your health. And these kinds of things are dangerous to a human being's health, and therefore you wouldn't be able to eat it. So it means, in other words, now, what are the differences? So you have differences. For example, so actually, as far as a suffix, it may be even worse if it's a matter of danger. We sometimes say chamira sakanta miisura, that cases of danger are sometimes treated even more stringently in halacha than cases of isur, because there's no playing around with them. The danger is danger, but there are other considerations about what there might be a difference. Cases where you can be makel when it's a matter of danger, rather than trefus. Okay, so the Gemara starts off. Omar Shmuel, he'll eat a chiltis. Suppose that an animal swallowed chiltis, which is a plant. It's called asafoetida In English, it's very, very short. Sometimes they would use it. Sometimes they would use it as a medicine, but it's also it's very sharp, and too much of it can actually, as we're going to see now in the Gemara, can cause punctures in the intestines. So trefa, then says Shmuel, the animal will be trefa. My timer, why is that? The minakul will mayonim, because it's going to cause its intestines to get a hole in them. The chiltis is so sharp, not sharp mechanically, we mean sharp as far as that it has that, we mean sharp like hot peppers, so it's going to make a hole, and therefore it makes the animal trefa. But then what says Moshe Rabshizi? Rabshizi says there are a contradiction to that. We said in the Mishnah, all these cases where an animal is seized by blood or affected by smoke or ate haudufni, or it ate chicken waste, or it drank bad uncovered water, he'll eat a tia. Another example. Now, Braisa continues now with more examples that if he fed the animal tia, which is a kind of very bitter herb, chiltis, or if he fed it chiltis, which we just said, or pilpulin, or if he fed it peppers, and when you say hot peppers, we don't mean hot peppers of the kind we're familiar with nowadays. Those are native to the Americas, but we mean, in other words, peppercorns, that's the kind you get black pepper from. So if it ate poison, in all those cases, kshirim. Then it's kosher. But the braisa continues. If it was bitten by a snake, and as we said, a snake bite, you have venom now in the animal's body, which now can be dangerous to a person who eats it, or it was bitten by a rabid dog. Same problem. So then we're teres mishum trefa. So from the point of view of trefa, it's mutter. Vasturim mishum sakonis nefashis, but from the point of view of danger to life, it is aser. So now, so we have a contradiction. Kasha samamavas a samamavas, kasha chiltis a chiltis, kasha samamavas a samamavas. So now you seem to have a contradiction as far as the chiltis and as far as the samamavas. As far as the chiltis, Shmuel is telling us that if it eats chiltis, then it's trefa, and the braisa is saying that if it eats chiltis, then it's fine. Kasha samamavas a samamavas. And for that matter, you have a contradiction in the braisa as far as the matter of poison, where the braisa is saying that if it ate poison, then it's fine. Whereas on Mishnah had said that it's mutter from the point of view of trefa, but it's also from the point of view of sakonis nefashis. So what is it? So the answer is chiltis a chiltis like kasha. As far as chiltis, there's no contradiction. And ba'olin can be kouting, because the braisa is talking about where it ate leaves of chiltis. So they're dangerous to an animal, but they wouldn't actually cause holes in the intestines. Can be kouting, as opposed to Shmuel, he's talking about kouting. Kouting would mean pieces. So it means, in other words, like actual pieces of the. Rebbe Gershom explains it means pieces of like the stem of it. Those have whatever the substance is in chiltis that makes it sharp. There's a large enough concentration of that in the stems that if an animal eats it, it may end up making holes in the intestines. So that answers that. Samamavas a samamavas like kasha. And as far as the two cases with poison, there's also no contradiction. Hada adam. One's talking about something that's poisonous to an animal, but not to a person. So the hadufni of our Mishnah, for example. So it's poisonous to animals, but the people are fine with it. Maybe it may not be the best thing for them to eat, but it's not going to be poisonous to a person. So therefore, now if an animal ate it, and again, it breaks down in its body, then therefore, especially if it breaks down in its body, then there's not going to be a problem for a person to eat it. Hada adam, as opposed to the Mishnah that said that if it eats samamavas, and it's also because of sakonis nefashis, we'd be talking about where it's human poison. So now there's the problem that you eat the meat, and you're going to be poisoned as well. So the Gemara says, wait, samamavas to mehema, hainu haudufni. But wait, we already mentioned in the Mishnah and in the Braisa, we both mentioned haudufni, which we said is a poison to animals. So if you're going to tell us that in the Braisa, samamavas means animal poison, and you're saying that it's mutter and there's no problem at all, then it already mentioned haudufni. Why mention it again? And the answer is, trei gavni samamavas, fine. We have two examples of samamavas. We have a specific example of haudufni, and then we have more general, and then we have more generally, we have other kinds of animal poisons. One difference is haudufni, one of the Mefarshim points out that haudufni can maybe be cured, but even if it's incurable poison, nevertheless, as long as it didn't. So if it actually makes a hole or an injury or something in one of the internal organs, well, then we've been learning throughout the Perek that holes in the internal organs make it trefa, and it doesn't matter what caused the hole in the first place, whether it was disease or injury or poison or whatever like that. But these kinds of cases we're talking about, there's no actual hole, there's no actual abnormality in the particular organ. You just have, as a result of the poisoning, the animal is now weak. So that wouldn't classify it as a trefa. That would classify it as what we learned before, Mr. Penis, where the animal is dangerously ill. And we said, again, you know, there's a chumrah to not shecht and eat such an animal, but there's no iser in it. Okay. The Gemara says, my tia, one of the things we mentioned in the Braisa is if the animal is fed tia, so we said that that kind of thing is still kosher, and we put it in the same category as chiltis. So what is tia? I'm going to be heard ikra de merirta. It means the root of merirta. So merirta is related to the word murr. So Rashi defines it as he uses a French word for it, toro, which is a particular very bitter and poisonous kind of plant. So that would be the root of that. There's actually an explanation that it actually means the roots of the chiltis plant. So we said, in other words, you have the leaves, you have this before we talked about the stem and the leaves, now we'd be talking about the root of it. Tosfos points out that Rashi over here defines it as one with one name, and a different in Psachim. Rashi gives a different definition of it. But whatever the case, they're both very dangerous. They're both very bitter plants, which have a poison to animals in them. But nevertheless, we're still saying since it's only an animal poison and not a human poison, then it's not a problem. Okay. Talking more about chiltis, now we're saying that chiltis is sometimes used as a medicine for people, but we're saying it can also be dangerous in that too much of it can cause holes in the intestines. So the Gemara brings in this connection, Amar Yehuda, Haiman de ochel tlosa tikli chiltis al libere kona. If a person eats three measures of chiltis, three of a certain weight of chiltis on an empty stomach, mishtalach mashke, his skin is going to peel off because the chiltis is going to be very, very hot. So it's going to cause his body heat to increase so much so that now his skin will peel off. Rabbi Nageshim explains a little differently that it's going to cause him to have like boils or inflammation on his skin, and therefore like he's going to scratch himself so much that his skin will come off. Rabbi Bo says, did you have a uvda? Such a thing actually happened to me. I ate only one weight of chiltis, not even three like Rabbi Yehuda said, just one. But it already had heated me up so much. If I hadn't immediately sat in water, then my skin would have peeled off. Actually, the Ion Yaakov points out an interesting thing. Rabbi Yehuda had said three, while Rabbi Bo was saying only one, because Rabbi Bo was saying even one is enough to cause this problem, but at least you can sit in water right away and then prevent the effects of it, as opposed to you eat three, like Rabbi Yehuda said, then you would be definitely a goner. So anyway, so Rabbi Bo says, V'kiyamti ba'atzmi, so thereby I fulfilled in myself, like what the Pasuk says, ha'chochma t'chaya ba'alaha, wisdom enlivens its possessors. In other words, if I hadn't been wise enough to realize that, to realize the effects that can be caused by eating chiltis like that, then I would have been in trouble. As we said before, chiltis is a kind of sharp herb in English. It's called asafoetida. It has the word fetid in its name, which means smelly. So it's something that smells bad and has a very sharp taste to it. So here we were talking about in terms of an animal eating it, but we're saying a person eating it also. Sometimes they would have small amounts of it for medicinal purposes, but Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Bo are cautioning you don't eat too much of it. Similarly, the Gemara points out another example of where a person eats something that's not good for him and it causes bad effects. Om Rabbi Yosef, Haiman de ochel shitsri bei. If a person eats 16 eggs, v'arba amguzi, and 4 walnuts, v'shev butisa de pirchi, and 7 grains of tzlaf. Tzlaf is called in English caper. So you have sometimes you can find caper berries sold in the store.
Here you have, so the person eats, among others, seven grains of that. The shossi revi'isa de drusha, and he drinks along with it, a revi'is or more of honey. But Kofas Tamo is in the summer season, a libere kana, and he does all this on empty stomach, misata talya de libe. Then the things that hold his, the things that hold his heart hanging in place, the ligaments that hold it in place get uprooted. In other words, basically a combination like this, Rabbi Yosef is saying, is very bad for a person. Why doctor these numbers? The pastors, I guess we would say that they saw with the medical science of their times that these kinds of things, too many of these things all in combination, has a bad effect on the body. Bechlal, you know, the Rambam famously says that everything should be in moderation. He says even, you know, you have a whole list of foods that are good for you and foods that are not good for you, but the Rambam says, you know, really the main thing is, the most primary thing is, don't overindulge in anything. So here, for example, where Rabbi Yosef is talking, let's say, about 16 eggs, so could very well be the 16 eggs itself is the root of the problem, and not so much the other things. Four walnuts, for example, is not that much, but maybe in combination with the 16 eggs and the revius of honey and all that, then it's bad for you. Okay. Getting back to, we said in the Mishnah that you have a case where an animal was bitten by a snake, so we said it is mutter. From the point of view of treifus, it's not that doesn't make it treifa unless again it causes any specific abnormality in any part of the body. But nevertheless, we said it is also because of sakonis nefashis. It is also because of the danger of the snake venom, and therefore you would and therefore you do have a therefore so in practice you can't eat it, but nevertheless we're still nevertheless it's still not treifa. Which the difference would be, for example, if you have a suffix, you actually have to be more machmir with dangerous things than with chafis. You have for one thing, then it's a machmina as far as what a person get malchus for it. If it's chafis, you get malchus. If it's mishum sakana, you don't. You can have, first of all, one point is that after all, you know, look, it's not also because of sakonas nefashis forever. Eventually it gets digested and broken down in the body. So therefore, so the Mishnah is saying it's not chafis, meaning long term, as long as you can keep the animal alive long enough, then it won't be chafis. Have a couple of other nafkaminas as well. So the Gemara tells Ahu bar tavya to also the Beirish Kabbalah. So it happened once that they brought a young deer to the household of the Beirish Kabbalah to have a mafsik karan basraisa. Its back legs had been cut off, but only in the lower part of the leg, which we learned before, does not have a problem with treifas. So first of all, Rav checked the Tzemes HaGidim, that area of tendons that go together that we've touched on a few times in our perek, and we're going to learn about in more detail in the next perek. So Rav checked to make sure that Tzemes HaGidim is intact, but actually, and then he declared it kosher. So now Rav thought that now that we declared it kosher, we could eat from it. So he thought to eat some meat from it. As umtsa, which Rashi explains, umtsa would mean is only roasted a little bit. You mainly, what you do is you salt it a lot and then you roast it a little bit. So in other words, basically like beef jerky. So Rav thought to eat from it like that. Shmuel says to Rav, like chayish ma'alani kuri, aren't you concerned that this animal may have been bitten by a snake in its hind legs, and that's why its hind legs are missing? So then it would be a problem of sakonas nefashis. Omalei, so Rav says, my tachanta. How do we fix it up? How do we check whether in fact that's the case? So Shmuel tells him, nois for the tanura, put it in the oven, di'il bodik nafshe, and it will test itself. In other words, roast it properly. Here you were thinking, Rav, that you're going to make it kind of like beef jerky. You're not really going to roast it very much. So now, he tells him, no, go and actually roast it fully, and you'll see that if it was envenomed by a snake, then you'll see that it will have an effect on it. Osvei, and so he put it in the oven to roast. Nofal tilchi, and it fell apart in pieces, showing, in other words, that it had been affected by the venom, because that's the venom has that property that it causes it breaks down the muscles, so it causes pieces to fall off by themselves. But you only see that when you're roasting it. Kori Shmuel, Alei de Rav, so Shmuel applied to Rav, you have the posit, no evil will happen to the tzaddik. Hashem protects the tzaddik. In other words, the point is, in other words, that that Hashem put it, Hashem put that Shmuel was exactly in the right place over there to be able to tell Rav that that there's a potential danger in here, so Rav should be saved from it. Kori Rav alay to Shmuel, and Rav in turn applied to Shmuel. The pasuk called Roz like oneslach, no secret is concealed from you. So in other words, like this, I would have had no idea of this kind of thing, and you knew it, and with that you saved me from danger. So the Ben Yehoyada explains. I mean, the fact that we know Shmuel was a doctor, so what's the great chiddush that he knew? So he knew that he knew this detail. So he explains basically that he gives a whole explanation that the Gemara tells us later in the Masechta that that Rav would not eat from a sudas or a shus, where he wouldn't eat from a meal unless it was a sudas mitzvah. So he wouldn't publicize that. That's not why. He would always make some kind of excuse. So now he didn't have any excuses. It was at the house of the Reish Galusa, and all the different usual excuses that he would use are not going to work. But Shmuel found a way that basically a way for Rav to have an excuse not to eat. And sure enough, it turned out that there was poison over there. So now Rav says, told Rosler on this loch, not just that you know the medical thing, but you also know all the secrets. You know all the reasons why I don't eat from a Suda Sereshus, all the various reasons, all the various concerns that I have about Kashrus, and you knew that none of them are going to apply in this case, and you still found a way to get me out of this. So in any case, so that's the halacha then. So an animal like that that's been bitten by a snake or whatever is mutter from the point of view of kashrus, but from the point of view of sakonis nefoshes, it's not. Which again, when it comes, obviously there would be a difference as far as malchus, but there are certain other differences in halacha as well as far as whether you say as far as whether it's one or the other. Okay. Now that we've gone through in the perek up until now with the treifas that make it with the conditions that make an animal or a bird treifa or kosher, now let's talk about which kinds of animals and which kinds of birds are mutter and not. This is going to take us from here to the rest of the perek talking about these details, what kinds of life forms in general, what kinds of life forms are also and mutter to eat. So the Mishnah starts off. Simonim behemah v'chaya nemru min haTorah. The simonim of animals and of domestic animals and wild animals are explicitly stated in the Torah. It says it needs to be mafresas parasa. It needs to have split hooves and shesas shesa parasa, which is included in that. That the hooves can't just be partially split like they are by a camel, where they're split in front but connected in the back. It has to be split all the way through front to back, as we've talked about before. Basically, if you think about it in human terms, a kosher animal walks on its tiptoes. The hooves correspond to our finger and toenails, basically. So the same way as if you put your fingers together on a surface, then you'll have them splayed apart. And from front to back, there's nothing between the fingers touching the ground. So it is also with kosher animals, that their hooves are completely split. And then the other one is maligator, that they chew their cud, which is they have that whole four-chambered digestive system that we've been learning about throughout the parak, where they chew their food again and again. To be able to break it down thoroughly. So kosher animals have those two simonim. A famous idea that the Rebbe brings in Sichas, that the deeper meaning behind that is that a kosher animal has hooves to separate it from the ground, meaning in the sense that the person is not representing that a person is not completely enmeshed in Gashmius. He keeps himself higher than it. On the other hand, it's split all the way through, representing that there's room, there is kind of room for him to affect Gashmius and vice versa, because after all, a yid can't just live completely separate from the world. He has to be able to affect it for good. And then Malagera, chewing its cud, represents that the person thinks over what he's going to do before he actually does it. Anyway, continues the mission of a simonia oifle nemru. Now, on the other hand, simonia of birds, it doesn't explicitly say in the Torah. The Torah gives us a list of non-kosher birds, but it doesn't actually say what they have in common. Aval omru chachamim. The chachamim explain, here is how you tell. First of all, kol oif hadoris, Tommy. Any bird that is dirtis, and by the way, there's quite a bit of this interesting discussion, an interesting discussion that goes back to the Rishonim. It's mentioned here and there in Sichos about all these things. Is it do we call it a Siba or a Simen? Is it because an animal has these two characteristics, therefore it's kosher? Or is it the fact that an animal is kosher is something independent in and of itself? But Hashem gave us these simanim as a simon to be able to tell. How are you going to be able to tell which ones are kosher? Then you have these. In any case, so Aval Omer Chachamim. So the Chachamim say, here's how you tell with a bird. First of all, Kol Oif HaDurdis Tomei. Any bird that is durdis is Tomei. So durdis literally means that it steps on. So Rashi explains that it means that it holds its prey with its talons and lifts it up off the ground to eat it. So it looks like it tears off pieces gradually with its talons. Tosfos, though, but further on in the paragraph, says, first of all, Tosfos brings an interesting point that asks, how do the Rabbanan know these things? We're saying that the Chachamim gave us these simonim, but how did they figure it out? Did they check every single bird? And if it's halacha merchant in Sinai, then the Gemara is going to, soon, in a few blocks, is going to tell us how exactly we derive it from the psukim. But halacha merchant in Sinai is then we don't really need those psukim. So Tosfos explains an interesting idea that they had a Kabbalah all the way back from Noach's times. We know that Noach, after the Mabel, brought korbanos from every kind of kosher species, all the kosher animals and kosher birds. Now Noach had them all available to him, of course, because anything that survived the Mabel was on the Teva. So therefore he's able to check them and he's able to determine that no kosher bird is dirtis and only some of the non-kosher birds have that characteristic. Anyways, that's first of all. Then Tosfos goes on to say that now when we say hadurdis, then a bird of prey, so Rashi explains dirtis that like it tears off pieces with its nails, with its talons, but Tosfos points out that chickens do the same thing as well. Chickens are unquestionably kosher. So Tosfos gives a different explanation of it. Tam explains that dirtis means it eats its prey while it's alive. So that would be a different definition of dirtis. Then you have other explanations as well. That Amban explains that it means that it's a predator and it kills them by being dirtis. Here we had before in the Perek, we had drusa, where an animal was attacked by a predator. So here dirtis would be the same kind of thing, that it presses on them with its talons, with its claws, and kills them that way. So you have a few different definitions of what dirtis is. In any case, so we're saying any bird that's dirtis, tome is definitely non-kosher. Kol oif sheyesh le'etzba yisera, then you have any bird that has etzba yisera. Now, etzba yisera literally means an extra toe. So Rashi explains that you have some kinds of birds. You have chickens, for example, you have three toes in front, and then you have on the back of the leg, you have one toe that's higher than the other ones. That's fixed backwards. So Rashi just says that it's on the back of the leg and higher than the other ones. Within that, there's a couple of things that stick out on the back of the leg, and there's different explanations among Rishonim which one it is, but in any case, the Ran brings a different explanation, that Etzvi Yisera means that of the front toes, the middle one is longer than the other ones. Anyway, the Zefek, and also if the bird has a Zefek, as we learned earlier in the Perek, the crop, the pouch inside the neck where the food goes first before it goes down to the stomach, the Kokovone Niklof, and that its gizzard can be peeled. So we've learned before in the Perek that the gizzard has two layers. It has an outer muscular layer, and then it has an inner layer, which is what actually grinds up and mashes up the food. So now, if that inner layer can be peeled off the outer one, so all those things tahor, then those are simanim of a tahor brood. Now we're going to be discussing in the Gemara in detail that if it has all four of them, it's kosher, and if it has none of them, then it's treifa, and if it has only one, two, or three, then we're going to be discussing in the Gemara when it's kosher and when not. So in other words, it's not like with animals where you have to have the two simanim choose its cut and split its hose, and one without the other is no good. Here with the brood, it's not necessarily like that. You can have some of them, and it can still be kosher, but we're going to see in the Gemara the exact details. maybe indeed that's why the Torah doesn't list them, because then if the Torah listed them, it would imply it has to have all four of them, and it's not so. As we're going to see in the Gemara, we're going to derive from the list of broods as they're given in the Torah what the rules are. As we're also going to learn in the Gemara. Now in principle, with that, we would be able to eat the vast majority of broods in the world. The fact is, we're not. So you also have, in addition, we're going to end up discussing in the Gemara that you need a Masoda, because the identities of the broods that are listed in the Gemara are not so clear, and therefore we need a Masoda to be able to know whether a particular brood is in fact not one of the ones listed in the Torah. Okay. The Mishnah continues. Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik says, "Kol oifa chulak esraglav tomei." Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik says, "There's another way you can tell whether a bird is not kosher. Any bird that divides its toes, so you put up a string, and then the bird perches on it. If you have two toes of it in front and two behind tomei, then you know this is a non-kosher bird. Then it shows that it's a dirtis, and it shows that it's one of these birds that's a dirtis." In other words, the point is, Rav Elazar ben Tzaddik is not arguing with the Tanakhama. He's giving us another way to identify a dirtis. You don't actually have to see it catching prey. You can see whether its toes go like that. The Meiri actually learns that there is a machlokus between them. Anyway, ubach govim. Now, what about when it comes to locusts? The Torah tells us there are certain kinds of locusts that are mutter to eat. In the vast majority of Jewish communities, we don't eat them because we don't know, because we're not so clear on the simonim. There have been historically different Jewish communities that ate them. Nowadays you have some Yemenites eat them. In previous times, it was more widespread. For example, in Morocco, up to a couple hundred years ago, they also used to eat certain species of locusts. Or Chaim HaKadosh, interestingly, brings on himself. He lived most of his life in Morocco. He says at one point he urged the people of his community to stop eating them. After all, most of the Jewish world doesn't, and we can't really be so clear on the simonim. So he says eventually they agreed with him and they stopped eating locusts. He says now, he writes years later, he says it's 12 years now since I got them to agree with that, and in all those years we never had a locust infestation. We never had a plague of locusts in Morocco, even though before that they had been common, because in other words Hashem was rewarding them. Midah k'neged midah. They're not going to eat the locusts. Hashem is going to keep away plagues of locusts from them. Anyway, so Ubachagovim, so when it comes to locusts, how do we tell which ones are kosher? Koshi yeshle avaraglaim, it has four legs. Now, locusts are insects. Insects have six legs. So what we mean is, in other words, four regular legs, the avaraknefayim, and also four wings. But these also, it doesn't say these simonim clearly in the Torah either. Later on in the parak, we're going to discuss how exactly we know this. The kautsulim, and then they also have their two front legs are jumping legs. In many insects that we're familiar with, ants, for example, and then flies and lots of one, just have six legs that are more or less all the same length. But then you have, with kosher locusts, you have two that are in front near the head, which are longer, and they have a knee in them, they have a joint in them that sticks up above the body, and they use that to jump off the ground. As the pasuk says, "Lenatar v'hein al ha'aretz," to jump with them on the ground. So two of its legs are modified to that. So the word kautsulim, like you have the word kausul or kautsul in Hebrew, means a joint, like the ankle joint. So here what it means is jointed legs that it uses to jump with. Or knuff of choifenes ruboy, and its wings cover the majority of its body. Rashi also brings a geusa, actually, that it's not just that it has jumping legs and that it has wings that cover most of its body. Rashi brings a geusa, actually, that it has... Rashi doesn't like this girsa, but he does bring a girsa, the kautsula, the knuff of choifenes ruboy, that both the kautsulim and the wings have to cover the majority of the body. In any case, those are the simonim for a kosher locust. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Shmoy Chagav, Rabbi Yossi says, in addition, you also have to have, it has to belong to the species of Chagav. As we will see in the Gemara eventually, why Rabbi Yossi holds that way. So those are the simonim of kosher locusts. Uber dogim, what about as far as fish? As far as fish, those you also have the simonim are clear in the Torah. Kosher yeshle snapper v'kaskeses, when they have fins and scales. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda says, Shnei kaskas and a snapper echad. It's not just enough to have scales, it's not just enough to have one scale, as the Tanakhama would say would be enough. You have to have at least two scales, or snapper echad, as far as a fin, it's enough to have one. But Rabbi Yehuda would say one scale is not enough. The Mephoshim talk about different points about why he would say you need two. If there's only one, then maybe it actually just mistakenly got attached to it from a different fish. Or the word kaskeses itself implies that you have more than one. Shuyin kaskasin, as I was going to point out, that it comes from a word in Tanakh meaning scale armor, and that means you have to have at least two scales. But according to the Tanakhama, it doesn't matter. The Eloin Kaskasin Akvurin Boy, the definition of Kaskasin is the ones that are attached to the body, namely the scales. Snapirim, Hapereach Behem, Usnapirim. And what are Snapirim, Hapereach Behem? What the fish swims with. Pereach means flies, but it means swims with them, with its fins. As we're going to eventually see in the Gemara, if the creature has scales, then automatically we know that it has fins, but the reverse is not true. Deeper meanings behind this is you have explanations that the Rebbe and that his father of Levi Yitzchak give about it. That the fins are the equivalent of a person's legs, for example. The fish moves with them, so therefore they represent learning Torah, and the scales represent mitzvahs. So now if a person has mitzvahs, then eventually he'll learn Torah as well, but the reverse is not true. It's possible, unfortunately, for a person to learn Torah and not care about mitzvahs, and therefore if you have scales, inevitably you'll have fins. The Rebbe talks about in another angle of it as well, which is that the fins represent a person's ability to be mechadish chidushim in Torah. Like, again, he swims, he goes through his elements and comes up with new novel ideas in Torah, whereas the kaskasim, the scales, represent his kabbalas oil to Hashem, that he protects himself, he's protected from negative forces from the Yetzirah. So again, the important thing is to have scales and be protected from that, and then eventually you'll have that ability, you'll develop that ability to be mechadish chidushim as well, but the reverse is not true. You can have a person who's a brilliant Talmud Chacham, but isn't careful about to stay away from Averis, and that's a problem, and that kind of thing cannot be considered a kosher fish, metaphorically speaking. Okay, so the Gemara says, Tana, as far as Rabbi Yehuda's opinion that you need at least two scales, and Rabbi Levick relates it to the idea that you have a person needs not just one mitzvah, but multiple mitzvahs, whereas the Chachamim say that, look, you know, it's possible for a person to have one mitzvah, which is considered the equivalent of many, and therefore one scale should be good enough. It is true, though, the Poskim do point out that if you find only one scale on a fish, you do have to check it very carefully to make sure that, in fact, it's not stuck on it from some other creature. But in and of itself, one scale, as long as you can be sure of that, it is kosher. One other thing that's important to mention in this connection, not everything that biologists consider to be a scale in a fish is considered a scale in halacha. That Anban explains that because we're comparing it, as the Gemara is eventually going to compare it to scale armor, so that means it has to be able to be removed from the fish without damaging the skin. Otherwise, it's just a protuberance from the skin, and it's not considered a scale. So this is Negea. There are certain kinds of fish. Sharks are one example. Sturgeon are another. There are a number of kinds of fish that have what ichthyologists would consider scales, but in halacha, they're not considered scales, and they're not kosher. So the Gemara starts off. Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa. Elohim Simonim Behemah. The following are Simonim of a land animal. The pasuk says Kol Behemah Mafresis Parasev Behemah. Any animal that has split hooves, and chews its cud. So the rule is the Braisa says Kol Behemah Shemalach Gera. Any animal that chews its cud, be a duah she'en lashinayim lamayla. Then we know for a fact that it has no teeth on its upper jaw. So now we're going to see it. Not that it doesn't have teeth at all, but it doesn't have certain teeth. So we're going to see now what that means. Now, the idea is you look at the mouth of a kosher animal, you will find that it has teeth on the, it has front teeth in particular on the lower jaw, but on the upper jaw, instead of having teeth there like we do, and like predators do and whatever, and other non-kosher animals, instead it has like a hard pad over there that the teeth press against. And this is the idea, precisely because they don't have upper teeth over there, they can't thoroughly chew their food, and that's why they go through the whole cud chewing process. So the Gemara says, a klolahu, is this an absolute rule? What about a camel? The malagehu, and a camel chews its cud, the English shinayim lamaila, but doesn't have upper teeth for tomei, and yet the Torah tells us that it's tomei. So therefore, so you can't say an absolute rule that any creature that doesn't have upper teeth is kosher. The Ramban actually has a different understanding, that there's two different kinds of malagera. Sometimes you have an animal, because, like we're saying, it doesn't have these upper teeth, so it can't chew the food thoroughly, So fine, it doesn't have teeth, but you still have to check for mafresas parasa. But the question is that the question would still be that a malagera, a camel is malagera because it doesn't have those upper teeth, and yet it's tomei. Okay. So the answer is gomel nivi, slay. The answer is the camel doesn't have those upper front teeth, but it does have nivi, which means so nivi are some kind of protruding teeth on the chop. Rashi brings two explanations. One is it means that it has two teeth above, so sort of like in a human being, you have the incisors in front, and then next to them you have canine teeth. So now the camel has two things like that as well on either side. So it doesn't have the front teeth, but it has those nivi on the side. Rashi points out they're also very recognizable in a horse. A horse does have upper front teeth, but you can also recognize the nivi among the other teeth. So that would be like the canine teeth or something. Then it actually gives another explanation, that nivi would mean the gums, that it means that it has a hard pad on the gums, and a camel has that, whereas kosher animals do not. So it has nivi, so you can tell it that way. But a kosher animal not only doesn't have upper teeth, it doesn't have those two protruding teeth, the canines, and it also doesn't have that hard pad. So the Gemara asks, "Are they ben gomel? What about that young camel? The nivi nami lesle? It doesn't have these nivi either, and of course it's not kosher because of that." So the answer is the two. And furthermore, you have to ask, "Are they shofen far nevis malaskerehain? What about you have the turtle with two other creatures that are malagera that chew its cud? The shofen and our nevis. There's a lot of different definitions of a lot of different possibilities of what they are. Shofen is often translated as rabbit, and our nevis shofen is often translated as hare, and our nevis as rabbit. Some say that the shofen is a creature called a hyrax." Whatever the case, those creatures, the malaskerehain, they also chew their cud. Now, if we're talking about rabbits or hares or hyraxes, they don't actually chew their cud in the way that, for example, cows and sheep and goats and camels do, but they do redigest their food in a different way. They excrete pellets that still have a lot of nutrition in them, and then they eat those pellets again, and it goes through their body again, and then when they expel it as waste, then all the nutrition has been gotten out of them. So that can also be considered malaskera. V'yeshlam shinayim l'mayla. They have upper teeth, or tmeim, and they're tummy. So we see, you can't say a general rule that any animal that re-chews its food doesn't have upper teeth. V'oid shinayim miksivi b'raisa. And anyway, does it say anything about teeth in the Torah? So how can the b'raisa be saying that if it's malaskera, then automatically it has no teeth? So Ella, Hochin Kama, so right, what the b'raisa means is the other way around. Kol behema she'en l'shinayim l'mayla. If you don't find those upper teeth, then automatically you know that it's a kosher animal, it chews its cud, and it chews its cud, and it has split hooves, or tahora, and therefore it's tahor. Now, of course, you do have you do have the question though. What about the young camel? So as the Gemara is going to say soon, you do have to be able to recognize that this is not a young camel. So Mefarshim explained this is not a Masurda that Chazal had. This is something that the Chazal figured out on their own. If it doesn't have teeth on the upper jaw, or even a pad over there to be able to chew its food properly, then how would Hashem make it that it would be able to properly digest its food? So it must be that it chews its cud. So that's the rule. So the Gemara says, "Validik the paus hisel." Okay, but why do you need to check only the teeth? Check the hooves as well and see if it has split hooves. Then you know it's kosher because as long as the only non-kosher animal that has split hooves is a pig. So as long as you recognize that this is not a pig, then it should be good. And the answer is "Venchari paus hisel chatuchos," because the case would be. And after all, isn't it better to check for simonim d'araisa? So the answer is, if the hooves were cut, again, if they were cut too high up on the animal, it's going to be trefa anyway, so we're talking about where they were cut lower down, where it doesn't make the animal trefa, but the point is they're cut or mashed up or whatever, and you can't tell. So kidur of chista, and therefore this is like ukidur of chista, and therefore this would be like what Rav Chista says. Da'om Rav Chista, ha'yu mahalach b'midbar. Suppose a person is traveling in the desert, u'motze behemesh ha'pasaseh ha'tofas. He finds an animal whose hooves have been cut up or chopped up or whatever, and he can't tell whether it's mafir spasa, burdik b'fiyah. So then we're saying he checks the mouth. In ein l'shinayin l'mayla, if it doesn't have those upper teeth, be a Jewish tahora, then you know it's tahor. V'in lav, if it has upper teeth, be a Jewish tmeya, then you know it's non-kosher. Over vaj yakir gomel, provide that a person can recognize that this is not a camel, to be exact, we say so as long as you recognize it's not a camel. So that's the Gemara says gomel nivi isla. You don't need that. But a camel, it does have upper teeth. It doesn't have the upper incisors, but it has the upper canine teeth, and that would be enough to be able to tell. So Ella Ulvachiaku ben gomel. Okay, but the Rav Chista means, and the Braisa itself means, that as long as you can recognize that this is not a young camel, because a young camel doesn't have nivi, and it's nevertheless non-kosher, but as long as you can recognize that this is not that, then if you find it doesn't have upper teeth, then you know you're good. So the Gemara asks, "Lav amet ika ben gomel?" Okay, but you're telling me that there is the young camel that had that ostensibly would be kosher because it has split hooves, and well, again, in this case over here, we're talking about the hooves are chopped up, so you can't tell. But it doesn't have those upper teeth, and you're saying that it's not kosher. Ika nami mina achuna dami ben gomel? How do you know there isn't some other kind of creature that also has the same characteristics, that's like a ben gomel, and that doesn't have upper teeth, and nevertheless is non-kosher? And the answer is lois tafadaydach. You can't think that way. The Tony Dvei Rabbi Shmuel, as it was taught in the Braisa of the Yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel, when the pasuk says the esak gomel ki malageirahu, the Torah says that you can't eat the camel even though it's malageira because it doesn't have split hooves, means shalat ba'ulamai, Hashem who rules over His whole world, yedeh she'en l'chodava malageira v'tomei ela gomel. Hashem knows that there's no creature that chews its cud, which is tameh, only the camel. Now, we don't just mean the camel, we mean the other two that go along with it in the Torah, the shofar and our nevis, but fine, therefore, lefichach parat bar kosev, who, therefore, the Torah specifies it. So, in other words, so once you have, so as long as you find a creature, that doesn't, now, in the case of the shofar and our nevis, as the Gemara said before, it does have those upper teeth. But the only one then that does not is the young camel. So that brings us back to the Chista's point. You don't have to worry that there's any other because Hashem is clearly stating for us in the Torah that there are no others. Now there is actually, we have later, we're going to learn tomorrow about Hashem, there's a creature called the Shesua, which has two backs. So we're going to talk about, are we talking about Siamese twins? Are we talking about a unique, are we talking about a species of its own? But whatever the case, the point is that kind of thing is very clearly noticeable. So then if it was a shesua, you would know it. So if you don't, then all you need to do is know that it's not a baby camel. And again, a shtofan and our nevis are always going to have those upper teeth anyway. So therefore that brings us back to the Chista's din that you would be allowed to eat it in that case. V'omar of Chista, Rav Chista says another din in this connection. Similarly, hoy mahalach baderech. What if a person is traveling on the road? And now before we said if he was traveling in the desert. Now we say if he's traveling on the road. So the Chassam Sofer explains there's a reason for the difference because let's learn the case over here and then we can talk about why the difference. So hoy mahalach baderech, a person is traveling on the road, or motze behemesh chapia gomum. Suppose he finds that the animal's mouth is cut off. So now the gums and the teeth, for example, have been cut out. So the jaws are intact, but the teeth are gone. So how are you gonna tell if it's kosher? So you have to check its hooves. In pausisera sedukas, if you find its hooves are split via duashi tahora, then you know it's tahora in lav, and if not via duashi tmeya, then you know it's non kosher. Or vavanshi yakir chazir, as long as you can recognize that it's not a pig. So the same idea. In other words, you don't have to check for the actual simonim that it says, for both simonim that it says in the Torah. You can have one and not the other. You can check for one without the other, as long as you know to recognize that it's not the species of animal. So now the Chassam Sofer brings a reason that when we were talking about that. It depends where you find the animal. So when, before we were talking about in the desert, so the concern is it might be a camel, and the Gemara is going to talk about soon, about a wild donkey, so we use the expression Bamidbar. As opposed to over here, we're talking about in a more settled area, you don't have camels and you don't have wild donkeys, so the concern is of pigs that are more commonly found in domesticated areas and in civilized areas, and therefore he uses the expression Hayim Alach Baderach. With that said, Maharam Shif says the Girsa in both places here in the Gemara should be Hayim Alach Bamidbar. Okay. In any case, so the Gemara asks again, Lav Amat Ika Chazir, but you just said that there is the pig that has split hooves and nevertheless is not kosher, and because it doesn't chew its cud. And you're saying with this animal, you can't tell whether it chews its cud because its mouth is chopped up. Couldn't there potentially be another creature similar to the pig in that and being non-kosher and yet having split hooves? So how do you know? And the answer is, again, you can't think that way for the same reason. The Tonid of Rabbi Shmuel. Again, we learn in a brisa from the Yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel that when it says "Vayasa Chazir ki Mafris Parasahu," the Torah says the pig which has split hooves, but it doesn't chew its cud, then it's tamei. Again, Shalik Bar Lama, Hashem who rules over his whole world. Yedeya she'en l'chol davar she'mafris parasahu v'tamei. There's no other creature that has split hooves and is tamei ela chazir, only the pig. Lefichach parat by a kosem who. Therefore, the Torah specifies with it the word who that it's the only one. So as long as you find that this creature is not a pig, then you know it's good. You know it can't possibly be anything else. Okay. V'omer Rav Chista, then Rav Chista says another din in this connection. Hoy mahalach b'midbar, a person is traveling in the desert, u'motz b'hem eshapir gomum, he finds that animal's mouth is cut off, so he can't tell about the teeth, u'pausiseh chatofes, and it's hooves are cut, so you can't tell whether it had split hooves. So what he does is, in the other case, is he can check it when it's alive. Here he has to first check it, but then burdik lufsara, then he checks its flesh. Im mahalach shesi ve'edim, if the muscles are crosswise, you have some muscles that go in one direction and then 90 degrees to them, you have ones that go in a different direction, be a duashi tahora, then you know it's a tahor animal. The imlav, and if not, be a duashi tmeya, then you know that's a tome animal. Ovolvadshi yakir oroid. In this case, to know that it's not a non-kosher animal, you have to be able to recognize that it's not an oroid, which is a wild donkey. So that particular creature also has this cross-grained flesh, but other than that, no other creatures have that. So therefore you'd have to check that. So again, you want to ask lav amak ika oroid, but you just said that there is the wild donkey that has this characteristic. Ikanami mida ahuina de damila oroid. Maybe there could be another one. And here we can't answer that the Torah specifies otherwise, because the Torah never specifies the simon in the first place. And the answer is gmiri delecta, the chamham the kabbalah, that there is no other creature that has this kind of coarse grain, flesh, muscles. So the Gemara says, "V'heicha bodik, where exactly do you check?" Amar Abayi, came in a pista, "B'kanfei ha'oikets," by the edges of the tail. So you find, or you look under, you look in the area under the tail of the animal, and you find over there in a kosher animal, you're gonna have shesi ve'edav. You're gonna have the flesh goes coarse grain, and in non-kosher animals it doesn't. Next, the Mishnah had said Simonik Chaya. The Mishnah had said the simonim of Behema and Chaya are in the Torah. So now let's talk about Behema and Chaya as far as the simonim of Kashrus. We said chews its cud and has split hooves. Let's talk about, though, there is also a difference in Halacha between Behema and Chaya, because we're going to learn later on, and then we're going to learn, first of all, we touched on before, we're going to talk about in more detail later in the Masechta, that the Chela of a chaya, of a wild kosher animal, is kosher, whereas the chalif of a domestic animal, cow, sheep, or goat, is not. You also have a difference as far as kisei adam, which we're going to learn about later in our Masechta. You have to cover the blood when he shafts a wild kosher animal, but not a domestic one. So it becomes important to know the difference between a behema and a chaya. So the Gemara says, Tanan Abban, we learn in a braisa, Eilu hein simone chaya. The following are a simonim of a chaya. And before we even continue the braisa, the Gemara interjects, chaya b'chol behema, the simonim. What do you mean? As far as the simonim, why do you need to specify separately for a chaya? Those are exactly the same simonim as a behema, that chews its cud and has split hooves. So Omer Rav Zeira said, Rav Zeira says, what we mean is, lahatu chelba. What we mean is to say that chelab is mutter. So how are we going to know whether this creature has chelab, which is mutter, is as follows. V'hochi kamar. So now let's continue the braisa. This is what it's saying. Elohim simone chaya shechelba mutter. How do we know the simonim of a wild animal, such that its chelab should be mutter, is kol sheyesh lakanayim. If it has horns, now we're going to ask soon, of course, domestic animals also have horns, so we'll get to that. First, let's go through the braisa. So it has horns, utlafayim, and it has hooves. So then it means that it's a chaya. Rav Doisa says, yesh lakarnayim, if it has horns, yakatzarach lakso altlafayim. Then you don't have to even check. Utlafayim, automatically you know that's a chaya tahora. Yes, l'tlafayim, but if it has tlafayim, you're still going to have to check whether it has horns. So we're saying, in other words, that according to the Tanakhama, the key difference is that it has horns, and then as far as the fact that it has hooves, tells us that it's a min tahor. And according to the Abdosa, you don't even need that. Once it has horns, then automatically you have hooves. Now, Tosfos also goes on to discuss, we're not talking about Simone Tara at all, because that we already dealt with before. We're talking about the difference between Behema Tahora and Chaya Tahora, and the idea would be, so now we mentioned horns, but we also mentioned Tlafayim. According to that, Tlafayim, the Rosh explains that the Tlafayim doesn't just mean hooves. All kosher animals have hooves. What it means is that the hooves of a domestic kosher animal are rounder, whereas the ones of a wild kosher animal are long and skinny. So now the Tanakhama would say that you need both. You need Karnayim, horns, and Tlafayim, long, skinny hooves. And Rav Dosa would be saying that if it has those long, skinny, that's something Rav Dosa would be saying, all you need to check for is horns of the type of horns that we're going to discuss soon, and then you don't even need to check the hooves because that doesn't matter. So the Braisa continues for Keresh, and then you have the creature called Keresh, even though it has only one horn, mutter, then nevertheless it's mutter, it's considered a chaya, and it's a species of chaya, and therefore it's chelev is mutter. The pre-chodesh talks about, does that only according to the Doisa? What about according to the Chachamim? The Gemara does mention elsewhere that the ox, that Adam Rishon brought an ox as a korban on the day he was created, and that ox had only one horn. And oxen are not a wild animal, they're a domestic animal. So maybe not necessarily are we saying, so maybe in fact the one horn might not be a simon of it being a chaya. So now that we finished the braisa, the Gemara says, "Klolahu, is this a general rule? You're telling me that Bach adds not just mutter, of course the animal is mutter, means chelbe mutter, means the chelav is mutter, like we said before. So the Gemara asks, Klolahu, is this an absolute rule? And anytime it has horns and it has hooves, Vare Eiz, what about a goat? The yesh the karnayim or tlafayim, it has horns, it has hooves, and even if you say that tlafayim means sharp, pointy hooves, and a goat has those, the chelbe also, and yet it's a domestic animal, and its chelav is also. So the answer is, Kruchvay Sveinen. The answer is that in order for the horns to be a simon of it being a chaya, it has to be kruchos. Now kruchos literally means circular. So Rashi explains it means that it has that. So Rashi first explains that it means that it has layers, one layer growing on top of the other, and whereas a goat does not have that. So Rashi actually gives two explanations. One is that it means like that, but then Rashi brings a different explanation that kruchas means round in cross section, as opposed to, in other words, for example, a goat's horns are not round, they have a different shape in cross section. Okay, so the Gemara says that it showed kruchos, but what about then an ox? Does have kruchos, according to either of these definitions, the chelbay also, and yet it's chelav is also. So that means chavrukos veinen. No, but what we also require is that the horns should be charukos, meaning that they have a lot of grooves in them, which have a lot of grooves in them, which an ox's horns do not. So we're back to the goat then. Right? Is the charukos? What about though by a goat? They are charukos. The chel by also, and yet the chelav is also. So Rashi understands that the Gemara is asking now that at this point it sounds like we said never mind kruchos. The key thing is that it's charukos. We don't care whether kruchos or not. But then the question is that a goat is charukos and yet the chelav of it is also. Tosfos brings that the Gemara is going to mention later there's a certain type of goat that actually has both called Isaac Karkos. We're going to have it further down on the onward. A type of goat called Isaac Karkos which actually has both. It's rounded and it has grooves, and nevertheless we're saying that there is a possibility that it's also. So at least according to that Mandalma, then how would we explain the Braisa? So the Gemara says, so again, according to Rashi, the Gemara's assumption right now is it means we need only charukos, and the question is a goat violates that. According to Tosfos, fine, we know that it's both, but even according to that opinion, there's an opinion that there's a creature that has both of those, and it's still, the chelav is still also, and it's considered a domestic animal. So the answer is, the Gemara says, mufutsalis meinan. What we require is that the horns are branched. That would be the simon for a chayim. So the Gemara says, "Vari tzvi de'en mufut solos." On the other hand, though, what about a tzvi? The horns are not branched. Now Rashi says, "What do you mean? A tzvi is a deer. It's usually translated as a deer. A deer has branched horns." So Rashi says that no, what we think of tzvi as meaning a deer, but Rashi explains that actually what the Gemara would mean over here is actually a mountain goat, and a mountain goat's horns are in fact not branched. Tosfos actually says that the fact is the Gemara in different places mentions other characteristics of a tzvi, and they match our deer exactly. So how could it be that the tzvi is not over here? So rather, Tosfos brings a girsa, not mifutsolos, but mivutsolos, that they stand upright. That they stand straight up with curved over edges, whereas a tzvi, the deers, are not bent over at all. They branch, but they're not bent over. So then according to that, it's not that. And the answer is the chelav mutter, and yet the chelav of a deer is mutter. And the answer is chaduros. And the answer is we require that the horns should be chaduros, which means that they have sharp tips. So Rashi actually brings two explanations. One that it means rounded, so it would be like what we talked about before. As far as kruchos, one possibility of kruchos, the other, but then Rashi says that's not what it means. Then we called that before kruchos. So rather, chaduros, so chadudos would mean that they're sharp, they have sharp tips. So the Gemara summarizes, Tilkach, so the bottom line is, putting all of that together, Hechad Mifsala, if the horns are branched, Loidinav, Loidayana, then there's no din and there's no dayan, meaning there's no question that's a chaya and you don't need anything further. There's no kosher domestic animal, or no animal in general that has branched horns that is not kosher and a chaya. Hechad Loid Mifsala, but if the horns are not branched, but in Kruchis Chaduris Vacharukis, then we require all three things that we said before. That's the Kruchis, round in cross section, and chaduros, it has to have sharp tips, vacharukos, and they have to have grooves in them, vuhu de mivlachil kaihu, and it also has to be only if those grooves are attached to one another. One of them is close to the other and like embedded in it. So like each groove is embedded in the next one. So all those things taken together will tell us that it's a chaya. So in other words, again, with only some of them, then you're going to have it. Still may be a behemoth. The Gemara says, behind the sake of the Isaac Karkos, this is the doubt about the Isaac Karkos, a certain kind of goat, where you have, it has all these simonim, but it's called the Karkos goat. So the question is, the fact that it's called a goat, does that mean that it's a domestic animal, or it has all these simanim, therefore maybe it would be considered a wild animal after all? So that's how Rashi explains it. Tosfos gives another explanation, and so does some other Rishonim, that the problem is it has groups, but they're not muvla, the groups are not, don't run into one another. Okay, so the Gemara tells, Tahi is a karkas, davoi be Reish Kalusa. There was once is a karkas in the household of the Reish Kalusa, the governor of the Jews in Babel, the Okrim, Loit Sane, the Tyra Minar, and they took out a basket full of chela from him. So the question is it mutter to eat or osir? Rabbi Choy osir, Rabbi Choy held that it's osir. Rabbi Shmuel b'reid and Rabbi Bohu ochel mineh. Rabbi Shmuel b'reid and Rabbi Bohu, though, ate from that fact. He held that it's considered a chaya. Kori anafshe, and he applied to himself, as the pasuk says, from the fruit of a man's mouth, his stomach will be satisfied. Meaning, I paskin the halacha that I learned from my rebbeim. I learned and paid attention to what my rebbeim said. That this is mutter, and in the course of that, now I'm able to eat from that chelav. Shochu mitam. They sent a message from. By the way, these two, Rabbi Choya and Shmuel ben Rabbi Bohu, are among the uli rabbanim sevaroi. So they're from the chachamim of the generation after. The Gemara had basically been completed, but they were able to add certain additions to the Gemara, and this is one of them. So the Gemara says, Shochu mitam, they sent a message from there, from Eretz Yisrael. Hilchsa kavaseid and Shmuel b'rei de Rabbahu, the halacha is like Shmuel b'rei de Rabbahu, that this is a character, the fact of it would be mutter. V'hizaru b'rabbeinu achoy, but they said, be careful to give cover to Rabbeinu Achoy, Shemeir Enei Goylohu, he enlightens the eyes of the Goylohu. He's a tremendous Talmud Chacham. So in other words, if it's in his presence, then don't be mocking it in his presence, unless he changes his mind. Because he's so tremendously great as a Talmud Chacham. Now, we said in the Braisa, the Keresh, we said that we finished off the Braisa, and said that a Keresh, Afbi Sheim, a Keren Achas, even if though it only has one horn, Mutter, then we said it's Chelev is Mutter. So what is the definition of Keresh? Omer Rabbi Yehuda, Keresh Tavya Debei Loi. The Keresh is otherwise known as the deer of Bei Eloi. Bei Eloi would be the name of a forest. And we're saying that the deer that lives in that the deer that's native to that forest has one horn, and it's considered not only a kosher animal, it's a species of deer, but we're saying that chelev would be mutter, even though it only has one horn. We talk about that the tachash. We talk about the tachash that was used for the Mishkan. The Yerushalmi actually has an explanation that the tachash is identical with the keresh, and according to that, then it might mean that it doesn't exist anymore. Because in that case, it wouldn't be negei lahalacha. Tigris. You should know also there's a creature called Tigris, maybe related to the word tiger in English. Auya de Bei Eloi, you should know that's identical with the creature that's called the lion of Bei Eloi. Again, a tremendously large kind of lion. You want to know how big it is? I'm going to kind of teisha amhosa have been una la una to Auya de Bei Eloi. This Auya de Bei Eloi, there's nine amos between its ears. Its head is so large. It has a very, very large, very, very large and wide face. The length of this creature is 16 amos. 16 amos is about, depending on which post you follow, is somewhere between about 25 and 30 feet. So it's a gigantic animal, and we'll learn, continuing in the Gemara tomorrow, about the greatness of these animals and how terrifying they are. But we're saying, in other words, you should know, these are these creatures, the Keresh and mentioning, by the way, the Tigris, they live in a forest called Bei Eloi, so if you ever find one of those deer, then you'll know that it's kosher, even though it only has one horn. And again, we'll continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, and we'll learn more about this Auya de Bei Eloi.